We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and we are not en route to the 9-game winning streak that I wish we had, but 6 out of 7, Lakers split a pair of games this weekend. On Friday night, I thought Indiana played a great game. Talk about a team that had a punch waiting for the Lakers. I could almost picture Rick Carlisle giving everybody crap about giving up 150 points to a team, and they came out with a point on the defensive end. So they went from giving up a season high to the Lakers of 150 to the Lakers season low on the season of 90 points on Friday. Lakers shoot very poorly from three. I thought they competed. It was a game that, like, they slowly lost the rope until they lost it altogether. But let's start there, because we'll focus more on the Brooklyn game, where they came out 17-0 to start that game. Just incredible on the defensive end. Brooklyn did not score until more than halfway through the quarter. Then they kind of held serve for the rest of the game. That's the brief version anyway, D. But let's start on that Friday game. It's third game in 4 nights. Lots of environmental factors that Mike was correctly calling out in pushback to my "let's go on a 9-game winning streak" mantra. So talk to me about Friday.
Yeah, I actually liked a lot of the process stuff the Lakers did against the Pacers. They just obviously couldn't hit a shot at all. D'Lo was 0 for 6 from 3. They were like 16% from 3, either for the game or for most of the game. You're not going to beat the Pacers that way at all. The Pacers are very much geared up to be a "we score 3, you score 2" team. And so the threes that you do take and that are open, those aren't shots really the Pacers want to surrender at all to begin with. And so
they have a very specific math that they're going for. We do too. We do a different thing because we're good at different things than they are. But yeah, it's a very, like, that's why last time we played them, I was like, they're very calibrated toward, between their personnel, their style of play, their schematic decisions, all toward that.
Totally. And so the fact that the Lakers couldn't hit their open shots, and then in general were playing in mud a little bit, and that was the tone of the game in general, right? It was way more of a slugfest game. We remarked early in our thread that Siakam, for example, looked not nearly as good as he had looked just 5 days previously, right? And that was the tenor of the game. It was just like, oh no, man, no one's getting off this night. You're going to have to be much better than you were offensively in the last game, because offensively, both teams were so free and so loose, and defenses were not geared up to really play that style. This was the opposite game. I thought both defenses showed up to play the game they needed to play in order to win the game. The Pacers offense showed up more than the Lakers offense showed up, and that was really the difference. And credit to Indy. They are a very good and well-coached basketball team. And I thought Halliburton's aggressiveness and his general want to sort of do more offensively. Mike had said that in the previous game, he was playing more like Lonzo Ball. And that past game, he looked more like the player he was earlier in the season where he was making an All-NBA run. That's just how it goes, man. Some nights you just don't have it. And the Lakers didn't have it that night, offensively especially. I, though, Pete, want to pivot to coming off that game and going into the Nets game. What were your expectations about the team jumping into the Nets game? Because Brooklyn has not been playing well necessarily, but they had won three straight games. And they have sort of found their formula in terms of like, hey, Cam Thomas, you're going to go get us a bunch of buckets. And then we're going to have these other quality players, Dennis and Mikal Bridges is more than a quality player, but Bridges and Cam Johnson. And they've got some okay depth, and they can be, if they're playing a serious and engaged brand of basketball and are hitting shots, they can, I don't want to say be scary, but they can certainly like keep up. And so I wasn't sure what to expect. Like, oh, third game in four nights, but this is the fourth game in six nights. This is like this road trip just keeps going. So where was your head at around the team? And then how buoyed were you based off of that first like 4 or 5 minute stretch?
So forgive me. Before we get into Brooklyn, I wanted to say my piece real quick on the Indiana game, and that there were
Please.
There were a lot of environmental factors that were working against the Lakers. Where it's like, I always talk about if you're going to die an honorable death and go out. Yes. You know, I thought that it was mostly that. However, I do think that there are some. It was more of a slugfest, as you properly pointed out, and I think that there are legit questions on. Can the Lakers win slugfest games? And to what degree can they? Now, is the third day game in four nights that game? No, I don't think that, considering all those factors, that was the measuring stick. But I do think that there have been other games that have had similar type of personalities where the Lakers have had similar type of struggles. And so I have a good belief in what this current group is with the starting lineup and with just kind of things are more locked into place. We had Gabe Vincent's return, which we'll get to. And so my thought is that if you lose a game like that to Indiana, the way that if you're a good team who's playing for something and has stakes on the line comes out is you're really serious about your business. And nobody more than LeBron James and AD came along too, but like defensively, amazing to start that game. LeBron was rebounding all over the place. We had some hit-aheads to AD. Like, how often have we had multiple rim runs in a quarter for AD since really the 20 season? And so just that style of basketball was super fun. You've got Austin and Rui. What was the stat? 114 of the 116 points from the starters? Just...
yeah, the bench only scored 2 points, and I can't even remember who scored them. No. Was it Dinwiddie?
It was Vincent. He hit that wild bank shot, Gabe. Remember? Yeah, he hit that wild yes. bank shot while drifting left. And so that was it. Every other point was scored by the starters. And so remember when we were theorizing the, hey, if you could start Rui, what might happen? One of the thoughts was like, well, you know, the worst guy in the starting lineup is on offense is who? Like all of them are good. And so on nights where those guys are clicking, it's just going to be really hard to stop that lineup from scoring. And that's borne itself out. But really, it was the defense. So as we move past the Indiana game, let's talk about the defense to start that game. Because to me, that was like the fully realized defensive version of that starting lineup.
So if we're going to start defensively, normally I would want to start with Anthony Davis. And we'll get to AD, because AD was lurking as a help player and switching out on the perimeter to contest shots. That's how he got those rim runs. The Lakers were switching a bit more, especially 3, 4, 5, but they were even switching on to the guards because the Nets guards are not like step back 3-point shoot guys. Okay, AD can guard Dennis Schroeder. He's done that multiple times in practices. So normally I would start with AD, but I'm not going to start with AD. If I was going to pick any other player on the entire team, Pete, to talk about what they look like defensively to start the game against the Nets, who would you think I would start with here?
Oh, man. Rui?
Austin Reaves.
Okay.
So I want to talk about Austin Reaves on defense, please. Pete, because Austin Reaves looked at Cam Thomas and said, you kicked our ass the last game. You came into the game and you busted us up. Cam Thomas was the reason the Nets won that game in Los Angeles when these teams played in January. He came off the bench and was basically just like stone face killer. Cam Thomas got that no expression look, like he'd be great playing poker. Does he have pocket aces? No clue, because this dude got the same expression the whole game. Well, Austin was just like, hey, bro, you're not getting me this game. I'm staying connected. Every time you try to drive, you're driving right into my chest. And then this is why I was going to bring up AD within the context of Austin, because Austin was very much a KYP, know your personnel, and a what is the game plan? And the game plan was, we're going to ride this guy's hip. We're going to stay in front and stay connected. I'm going to get over the top of screens. I'm going to back contest the best way that I can. And we're going to funnel all of these guys to Anthony Davis. And I thought everyone did a very good job within the context of the game plan. But I thought that Austin and then Rui on Bridges, both of them had the sort of marquee assignments in terms of, these are the guys that are going to do the most damage. And we need you guys to be very locked into what your specific assignments are and what the game plan is around these guys. And honestly, I'm not sure anyone in the entire game was better at that than Austin. AD is always going to be great at his job defensively, but Reeves has been tremendous defensively for several games now, honestly. He's had some like backline rim contests, really good in transition as like lone man back, like doing some Derek Fisher type stuff, like stunting and then stepping up to try to like bait a charge and waiting for his guys to come in behind him to help clean up possessions. And so I just wanted to give Austin some love defensively, because earlier during the season, he was not playing to this level defensively. And this is the version of Austin defensively that I think is the guy the Lakers really need if they're going to be a team-wide higher level defense.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden the athletic deficit that we see at some points goes down a little bit, right? Because he is able to make plays with speed, or plays with jumping in the air and contesting a shot at the rim, or again, just beating a guy to a spot, being more, and part of it is being like just more locked in. So it's like a mental, you see a thing coming.
Anticipatory.
Right. So like that steal that he got on Claxton is a perfect example of one where, is it a steal where if you don't get it, are you giving up a corner three? Yes. But that was something that stood out to me in yesterday's defense overall, is there was a certain amount of like, we're going to try to contest the ball handler. And then that second line is also going to come up and try to deflect the pass type of play. And it's sort of like a more attacking thought to defense, rather than we're small and undersized, we're going to lay back on our heels. That's actually how you lose, as being small and undersized. You actually have to kind of attack the ball and win the ground game and beat guys to the spot more. And so Austin's job within the team's broader defense, which I'm going to get to in a sec, is like he had to guard the best guy, the biggest threat in Cam Thomas. And man, is that guy a scorer? He's just unbelievable as a scorer. But Austin was beating him to the spot. He was getting him kind of twisted up a little bit. And then AD was there. To me, like, it all, AD is the center of the universe on this.
Yes.
And the level of communication, Lakers are switched more in that game, but it wasn't against everybody. And it was like more Cam Thomas had Austin trailing him whenever he could, but we were switching a lot of other stuff. Anyway, that requires a certain amount of communication. If you're like sort of giving extra attention to one guy, but everybody else is switching, right? It's not just this sort of rote, like, oh, we're switching everything, so I don't really have to think about it. You can get very mentally lazy in that style of defense. But in order to execute this style well, you have to communicate. And so just guys were talking and pointing and beating guys to the spot in ways where it was like, you know, they're not the best team, but to see them execute a switching-ish level of defense, and AD talked about this post-game, that was a big takeaway for me. So let's take a break here, and we'll come back, keep it going.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So Pete, it's super interesting because one of the things that can happen when you switch a little bit more or when AD is on the perimeter is that what's up with the rebounding? Are the Lakers going to rebound?
Mm-hmm.
And after every pod, like for the last week, you and I will chat for a few minutes a lot of times and you'll say, damn it, I meant to talk about the rebounding. Right? Yeah. It's been a thing we've been wanting to hit. Yeah. There will be things that get left out of this pod for sure. But one of the things that's not going to get left out, Pete, is the rebounding. Because when you switch more or when you play this aggressive style of defense, you must then box out and fly to the ball because you were not necessarily on the guy that you started with. Right. And so there are going to be mismatches on the back line. There are going to be guards who are having to box out a guy who is a little bit bigger than him. And then the forwards who are not necessarily underneath the basket because they are maybe on a perimeter player, they need to swoop in and they need to rebound. And this was one of the better games all season that I've seen LeBron be like, oh, hell no. You think you're going to rebound? With me this game, you are not. And LeBron only ended up with 7 or 8 rebounds, I think. But he had 3 or 4 very early in the game that I thought set the tone for the team where he was like, no. Brooklyn, you think you're going to get some offensive rebounding chances with me on the court? You're not getting those. And so LeBron, I thought Rui had another good game on the backboards. 3 out of 4 nights he's had double-digit rebounds. It's like the way that they were closing down possessions and finishing possessions with the ball. Now, they didn't do it all game. They played some smaller lineups. But what have you been seeing from a rebounding perspective, not only against the Nets, but just overall the last few games? Because it's a critical part, I think, of what the Lakers need to be defensively. And it's not always there, but it's been better lately.
I think it's been better, especially in the groups that have AD in them. And so with the starters, this was the case. And just like you really pointed out, well, when you do switch a little bit more, you're going to have mismatches under the basket. And if everybody else is watching the guard trying to box out the big man, who this is what he does for a living, is get rebounds around the basket, and just watching him and being like, oh man, that sucks for you, dude. Good luck. Rather than feeling the compulsion to get in there and, you know, tap the ball away. And so, like you said, with LeBron, this is a place where Austin's really been impacting the game. And then Rui gives the Lakers another guy who can box out and can, like, he's gotten a couple rebounds lately that are very, they look like drill rebounds, where it's like, all right, shot off the backboard, like you're doing a drill in practice, shot off the backboard, put a body on him, go to the ball, grab it with two hands and chin it. Right. Very old school type of rebounding drill. And I'm like, yes, Rui, just like that, you know. And so that, to me, honestly, if the forwards are rebounding at that level, it makes smaller lineups so much more viable. Now, we're going to talk about some of the smaller lineups a little bit later in the game, because I think that that's the glaring part of the game that needs to get addressed. But that's why the Lakers went out to that 17-0 lead, right? But, and so after that, though, they lost the rope a little bit. And there's one guy we haven't talked about yet that has kind of made an impact on that game. Holy crap, LeBron James, 9 out of 10 from 3, 40 yeah. points. 13 of 17 from the field. He had that play earlier. He just had a pep in his step from the beginning. And he had a play where he was mentally like going 3 levels faster than everybody else on the court was. Everybody else kind of came out with sort of that feel it out a little bit on the offensive end. And anyway, he gets the rebound and he like was trying to pass it off to AD with a little bounce pass. But AD's level of just like how fast we're going right now was at a different level. And so he kind of flubbed it and LeBron like tracked it down. But it was very much like a youth basketball type of play that you never see in the NBA that I was cracking up about.
It was a bumper cars play.
Uh-huh.
He had a collision. Yeah. He's grabbing the ball. He's looking at the ref.
Bro, like, go see nine-year-olds play basketball. It's a whole element of the game. You kind of got to win the scrums and things like that. And just the greatest scorer of all time having a moment like that because he's so amped up for a game. I thought it really spoke to just the level of spirit that he brought, that it showed up in his jump shooting. But I just thought that was a game where it was like, we won because we have LeBron James on our team. And that was that.
I was thinking after the game too, man, like, and you've heard Nets players talk about this, and it's been a topic of discussion. Like, I've heard JJ Redick talk about this as well, because he lives in Brooklyn and he goes to games. And the number of fans that go to Nets games that are not Nets fans and are basically just there to watch a basketball game or to watch the other team play. And the number of cheers that LeBron and the Lakers were getting every single time he made a play, and like the escalation of cheers as he was getting hot over the course of the game, and the level of shot making just kept going up and up and up and up and up. So he's got like, oh, catch and shoot three. Some of his catch and shoot threes too were like hard. So he's like record scratching, like ball fake, and then the guy doesn't quite go for it. So he just then goes right into his shooting motion again. They were threes that kind of reminded me of Kobe to a certain extent, because you know how Kobe would ball fake, and then it was such a part of Kobe's rhythm that he would use ball fakes a lot in terms of shot fakes in order to set something else up. And so how many times do you think Kobe practiced a shot fake? Oh, no hand up. Oh, I'm just going right into my shooting motion then again. But LeBron doesn't shoot those a lot, and he took a couple of those this game where I'm just like, oh, he's certainly feeling it. The one three he missed was the one that you know was coming. It was the like, oh, I'm hot. I'm going to take this 35-footer in semi-transition just because I want to. But the one from the left corner where like the step back fading out of bounds one, the one from the right wing where he's dancing with the ball and putting it between his legs a bunch, and just the crescendo of the crowd. He's wearing shoes that like he should have worn to like a Beyonce concert because they're all freaking silver and shiny. And it's just like he was in it the whole entire game. And so, yes, it showed up in his shot making. And yes, it showed up in some of the rebounding. Mike has said this a bunch, that the team goes where LeBron takes them. And when LeBron is showing that he's ready to play, and when there are games where LeBron is loose and before the game, and it's like joyful and he's like laughing and doing his little dances when he makes a three, they were playing some good rap music before the game. LeBron is like rapping the lyrics and he's got this serious look on his face, and you just knew. He came into this game with a certain amount of seriousness, and the team followed him. They followed him defensively. They followed him offensively. And that whole idea of like, no matter how old LeBron gets, it's his team. So AD can be the best player night to night to night or on any given night, but LeBron is still the guy that he galvanizes the group with his spirit. And I thought against the Nets, but in general, man, over the last week and a half or so, he has really elevated that part within the leadership of the team. And you can tell that it's no coincidence the team is playing their best basketball of the season when LeBron is taking this attitude on a night-to-night basis.
Very much so. And I didn't see that as much in the Indiana game. Like, if you wanted to very much simplify, why did one game go one way and the other go the other, is that LeBron was unbelievable against Brooklyn and he was fine against Indiana. And so he has had some strange turnovers lately that this has been a thing kind of throughout the team. I do chalk it up a little bit to we are a little bit tired. We know we can beat this team when we put our foot on the gas. And this has kind of been a habit of this team, and is sort of, that's not unusual for a team that feels like they can, you know, close out a team at any point. But there has been an uptick in on ball turnovers recently. That just curious your thoughts on, I hate to do this on a night where he was so brilliant, but just an observation from a couple of games.
I just think that sometimes, this is interesting because I told you I've been playing a lot of chess. Even my kids will be like, are you playing chess? Because I'm just on my phone. But there's a lot of like, oh, okay, you can pre-move in chess a fair amount of times because you can sort of expect like what the opponent is going to do next based off of the thing that you just did, right? Especially if you're in the opening stages. It's sort of just like, oh, okay, well, I move my knight here. Their next move is going to be one of these two or three moves. And based off of that, my next move is still going to be this. I'm going to move my bishop there and then on and on and on. I bring that up because LeBron is pre-moving a little bit within the context of his passing. And so he has played so much basketball, Pete, that there are times where I feel like he passes on autopilot because he understands all of the coverages. He understands what the other team is going to do. And it's not like he's not making the right read. It's like, oh, well, in this case, they sort of tricked him because they went high hands a little bit, or they jumped out a certain way this way when that's not necessarily what it's supposed to be. And I think some of it is just mentally the passing part of the game is where he can sometimes cruise a little bit, and the defense is making him pay a little bit more than what they've made him pay in the past. He's also like getting up in the air a couple of times where he's like jump passing and then the pass isn't necessarily there. Mm-hmm. So it's just a few things where it's like, okay, could he clean it up a little bit? Sure. I also think that it's like these, I don't want to say they're always the right reads, but it's definitely within the range of this is an acceptable play to make. And the defense is just being better in that instance than his pass was.
A lot of them too were like on ball deflections. Or one thing I've noticed from watching the Miltangles the last couple of games is even when he's dribbling, he's kind of flubbing more dribbles than he normally does, where it's just kind of going off his fingertips. He's talked a lot about like, I'm tired, I got bad wheels. If you listen to him in post game, where I do think that there is a degree of he's trying to ramp it up while also managing physical stuff. And so, yeah, I do think that that's part of the equation as well, is that like he's obviously taken his game to another level over that last week and a half, and doing the same actions at different speeds and then still picking your spots when you can, you know, be in the post and find an open guy but not expend a whole ton of energy. I think that's part of the process. So I think that's just something that we're going through right now. So let's take a break, come back, and keep going. So you brought up Austin a little bit earlier. Austin and Rui on the offensive end, I feel like, have really taken their games to another level. So we've focused a bit more on the defensive end, but on offense, I feel like when this team hits heights, there's been a lot of nights lately, D, where it's like, team hasn't done this since Happy Hairston, or just some wild stat on offense comes out, you know, that it's been super fun to watch, but that 114 out of 116 points, we need to talk about the bench within that too, of course. But more. Talk to me about Austin and Rui. Sure.
I'd much rather, though, raising their game on the season, just like live in the moment. We're never going to get those other 50 games back, like, or whatever. It's super frustrating, I know, but to lament that rather than to just like look at Rui and be like, hey, man, like, thank goodness for Rui. So there was that shot that he hit down the stretch of the game, and you were texting because
in a moment of weakness,
because the bench came in.
I was like, it's a trap. So what's it? It's like 2:45 left in the game. We're only up like 12. I've seen that unit
and
give
it's
up.
It's the deep bench.
Yeah, deep bench. I've seen that unit give up 10-0 runs in like 90 seconds. And I'm like, should we be emptying? So I'm like, uh-oh, we're about to give up a run right now.
And then here comes Rui. Mr. Reliable with this little between the legs, like ISO stuff, right into his pull-up jumper, 17-foot, beautiful shot. And I've been so appreciative of Rui, Pete, for all of the little nuances of his game and his complete understanding now of how he's supposed to work within the offense. Flashback to October and November. And remember Rui in this five out offense,
man.
And he he looked like, what's going on out here? This is, and so it's funny that you bring up Rui and Austin, because both Rui and Austin, I yep. think, were very much in the same boat of like, we are not as familiar playing this style. And while we can still find success within this style, we do not look natural within this style. And now, Pete, Rui's doing all of the little things that are putting him in position to get the exact shots that he is comfortable making on a night-to-night basis. And his improvement as a three-point shooter, his confidence in taking the three-point shot, and then all of the cutting, all of the finishing around the basket, his ability to isolate and be a release valve player as just like a second side, like we're just going to give you the ball and you just go one-on-one against your guy and get us a good shot. There are so many things that he's doing, and there's a reason why he's getting you 14, 16, 18 points a night, and it looks very natural, and it looks very much in the flow of things, because it is. It's just like, oh, there's Rui lurking on a baseline cut, and D'Lo hits like hits him for a pass. Oh, there's Rui, quick little pick and roll with D'Lo, pocket bounce pass or over the top pass, and then he's finishing inside. How many left hand finishes has he had in the last month? How many up and under reverse layup has he had? He looks like a player who has complete command of his offensive arsenal within the context of what the Lakers offense is supposed to do on any given possession. And that merger of his offensive game and the Lakers offensive structure, he is living right in the middle of that Venn diagram. And it's producing great results pretty much every night now.
This offseason, Rui was the player I was most worried about in the context of our switch from four out to five out, because four out, as you know, we've discussed before, is a lot more dribble penetration, and it makes sense when you have drivers like Russell Westbrook, Dennis Schroeder, Lonnie Walker. That is the offense that more suits that type of personnel. If you've got shoot, pass, dribble type of guys, which the Lakers have a lot more of now, it five out, and I think that's one of the really smart moves was them switching from four out to five out. But I worried about Rui within the context of that, in that it's a lot more like split decision type read situations, especially for the on-ball type of players. I was worried that that would affect Rui as an off-ball player as well, but it took a little bit of time for him to realize this is where the good shots come from. But with Rui, I feel like this same process happened within a different offense last year, where Rui, it eventually got him to a point where he was like, oh, if this happens, then I slide up to the wing and be ready to catch and shoot. If they cheat off of me or if they press up, I can catch and attack. And like both Austin, like to bring Austin into this, some of the passes that he's making, he was, if he tried anything like that, it was getting deflected earlier this year. And some of them still do. And he still kind of will drive into a road to nowhere sometimes and get a turnover on that. But there's this increased understanding of where to be and then to be decisive off of that, that both of them are showing, that is such a complementary thing on offense to elite to superstar players like LeBron and AD. And we'd be remiss to not bring D'Lo into this too. He's such a linchpin as a screener, as a shooter. He didn't have a good game against Indiana, came back and was solid against Brooklyn, and was part of that defensive effort as well. And so just that unit as a whole really is humming on the offensive end, and it's cool to see.
Yeah, the one play that I think of between Rui and Austin is the play against the Pacers, where Austin ripped through, he got a great drive to the basket, got all of the way downhill, but pitched it all the way directly behind him to Rui, who relocated into the vacated space that Austin had just left, right? Like right at the top of the key. Because Rui's been shooting the ball so well, he got a good closeout, he ripped through, attacked the closeout, and then got that big dunk off of 2 feet against the Pacers. And it was that sort of like synergy with Austin as a driver and a passer, and then Rui with the relocation and then the drive in the finish, that I think totally symbolizes the exact sort of growth that you're discussing here. Pete, before we wrap up, I really did want to hit on Gabe Vincent's return. He had not played since December 20th. against the Bulls. And even that was like a one game return after he had been banged up and missed time. What did you think of Gabe? And what did you think of the lineups? And I know this is a bigger discussion, but just like Gabe's return, give me your two cents as to like first impressions for a guy coming back with only 8 games left in the season.
It's funny you frame it that way, because those first 4 games of the season that he played in, the Lakers were very much a jumbled mess. None of this process had happened with Austin and Rui that we were just talking about. The overall, and of course, it takes reps to get good at something. Like that, I do chalk a great degree of those early offensive struggles up to a learning process. Now, I do think there were some other factors under our control, but I digress. But the team's gotten much better in a way where when Vincent played before, it was just, they weren't a cohesive team at that point. And so in my dreams of him coming back, right, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to come back to a level of cohesion that didn't exist before. There were some moments that were there, and there were some flashes of his individual play, but within broader groups, where I was thinking of the conversation we were having about the fears of the lineups and things like that. And now Jackson Hayes was out in this game. Obviously Christian Wood is out. So the Colin Castleton barely played at all, but basically that's the argument, right? Is like, do you go just super small at that point and not have the guy that's just been in the G League for most of the year and just coming off an injury at that, right? Like, there aren't great options at the 5 spot at that point, but I also thought I was watching the really small groups going like, oh God, I really hope we don't go in this direction if and when everyone's healthy, or even when just Jackson Hayes is back, right? Like to me, Vincent was in a lot of groups that were kind of distorted in this way, but he did some cool stuff individually as a defender, especially that I like. So yeah, maybe you can get into some of the detail on that, but that's sort of the context to me of Vincent's return.
I thought he battled defensively. I thought he was assertive in looking for his own shot, which is more than I can say for so many of the other guards who passed up shot after shot after shot in some of those units. One of the reasons why some of those groups had bad plus minus, Pete, is because they like waved off good shots and never got a good shot again in the context of them cycling through and passing and passing and passing. And so I thought it was good to see Gabe be aggressive and play his game. The thing I'm interested in is, he ended up in some defensive matchups where I noticed how small he was. So I thought he battled against Cam Thomas, for example, but then he fouled him on a 3-point jump shot and gave up a 4-point play because he was just jumping out there to try to contest. And Cam Thomas is a 6'4", 6'5 guard, and Gabe Vincent 6 feet. And it's just like, I don't care what he's listed at, he looks small compared to this dude, especially a player like Thomas who has a high release point and really jumps on his jumper. He had another possession where he tried to close out on Cam Johnson on the wing because he was guarding Cam Johnson, and he did not bother Cam Johnson at all. And like I thought Gabe actually made a good defensive play in the context of he tagged the roller. He did his job from the weak side. He tagged the roller, absorbed the roll, saw the kick out pass or the swing pass, busted his ass to get out to the 3-point line to try to contest, and Johnson didn't notice him at all. It's just like he just shot right over the top of him because that dude is 6'8", 6'9", right, and Gabe is, again, 6'1". My worries about Gabe and integrating Gabe are less about offense and less about his individual game, and more about how he's going to fit into the groups that and what his individual asks are within those groups. The Lakers played a lot of 3-guard lineups. And this is where I'm like, man, it'd be nice to have another forward or a big guy available. And I was hopeful that they would have played Castleton with, like, at the start of the second and start of the fourth quarter, I wanted to see Castleton in the game. Instead, they played Rui and LeBron at power forward and center. And those groups didn't rebound as well. And it's because, like, there's not a lot of athlete there at those guard spots. even if they are. So it's just like, you're small, you're not athletic in terms of like run and jump style. Some guards are run and jump guards, but the Lakers don't have a lot of run and jump guards. And Gabe coming back, he's not one of those either.
We got to talk about the Lakers bench and exactly through that lens. So we'll do that tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one,
miss it. Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.